When I started giving halacha shurim for the ladies, so I learned very quickly along the way that ladies have a very big milah that they want to hear what to do with the maisa. They don't necessarily want all the different shitas and the lumdas and the arguments and the this and that. What rabbi, what do I do? The men say, Rabbi, what's the lumdas? So now I'm saying a shir for the men and for the ladies. I'm not sure how I want to say this shir tonight. So we'll have to see how it happens. I am going to ask one thing, that we're going to hold the questions till the end. Usually I left questions in the middle, but just there's a lot to cover, and I think it'll affect the flow if I interrupt with questions, so we'll leave questions for the end. Okay, so the topic of the shir is aser bishvil shatis asher. A person should take meiser in order to become rich. And that's a chazal, it's a gemara in Masechtas Tainus. The gemara in Masechtas Tainus says that Chazal make a drasha that the pasuk says aser ta aser. What's the double language of aser ta aser? Aser, you should take off meiser in order that shatis asher, you should become rich. This is brought down in the beginning of Hilchos Tzedaka. The Ramah quotes this statement of the Gemara in Tainus that aser bishvil shatis asher. The challenge, however, is that there are many poskim who disagree with this Ramah. I said that is referring to the and the, oh, one more step. And the Gemara says not only that, this is something you could take to the bank. You can take this to the bank. The Gemara says that you're not allowed to test God. There's a prohibition on Tanasa with Hashem, but there's a Pasuk in Malachi. It says, "V'chanuni no b'zayis, test me." Hashem says, "Test me. If you give Meiser, I will guarantee you that you'll become rich. You can take it to the bank. This is a guarantee you can take to the bank." But most opinions say that's referring to Meiser of grain, tavua, Meiser of produce, which grew in Eretz Yisrael. There's a mitzvah of Meiser. You have to tithe and give 1/10 of your produce, of the grains which grow, of your grapes, and of your olive, that's the raisa. Any produce which grows is the rabbana. So you have to give, either at the raisa level or the rabbana level, you have to give meiser. So that pasuk, which is referring to, you can test it, you can test God with taking meiser, taking a tithe, and you'll become rich because of it, is referring to meiser of grain, not meiser of money. 1/10 of, not tithing money. So therefore they disagree with the Ramah, and so you can't rely on this. I mean, it's a good idea, we're not because it's not a good idea, but this promise that God says, I promise you, that if you give Meiser, you'll become rich, doesn't apply to Tzedakah. However, the Shulchan Aruch does continue, and it says that a person will never become impoverished because of giving Tzedakah. There's a Havtocha that a person will give Tzedakah, the person will not become impoverished because of that. We'll have to explain what that means a little bit later on. Okay, I just wanted to start with repeat, we're leaving questions for the end. Different than my regular halacha share, I just want to leave questions for the end, so you don't lose the flow. I want to share with you a story, the power of tzedakah. I mean, of course, there's hundreds of stories. There's a sefer called Me'il Tzedakah. Me'il Tzedakah was written by the Shevet Musser, lived about over 300 years ago, closer to 400 years ago, in the city of Izmir, and he was a tremendous one of the Gedolim. And the Me'il Tzedakah, the Shevet Musser, he wrote many sefer. One sefer he wrote was called Me'il Tzedakah. The whole sefer is on the topic of tzedakah, but not the halachas of tzedakah, the Musser element of giving tzedakah, the Musser importance of giving tzedakah, etc. And it's all based on psukim, midrashim, some are from Chazal, and drushes in the psukim from the later commentaries. And he quotes the following story. And it's a very powerful story. There's a gentleman who was a Rasha. This is a person who did not keep Torah, did not keep mitzvahs, did many bad things in his lifetime. And he was getting older, and he came to the point where he felt he was certainly going to, he was ill, he was going to die. And he's realized he's going to die soon. So his friends asked him, do you have anything, any requests that you have before you die? Anything you want to do? He says, yes, there is. One thing I want before I die is there's a certain type of food that I've heard about which tastes very good. And before I die, I want to have a chance to eat that food. Can you please make this food for me? This fancy dish. And they say, yes. And they find out exactly how to make it. And they go to great length to make this very, very special, enticing, tasty delicacy for him. He's lying in his bed. He's very ill. And they bring this food, and he smells the smell wafts in, and it's a tremendous smell, and it's going to be great, etc. And there's a knock on the door. There's a poor man at the door. The poor man says, "I haven't eaten. Can you give me something to eat? Do you have anything to eat?" He says, "I have nothing to have in the house to eat, but this food. I will give you this food." And he gives him that food. And shortly after that, he dies. A few days later, the story goes that he appears to his son in a dream. The son asks, "Can you tell me, where are you at this point in time? Did you go up or did you go down? Where are you right now?" So he says, "I'm up. I'm in Gan Eden." So the son says, "Excuse me, but how in the world are you in Gan Eden? I know what you did, and whatever I know is not even, that's one half of what there is out there probably. How in the world do you make it to Gan Eden?" So he says the following. He says that the poor man who came to my door at that point in time, and I gave him the food, that poor man was very, very, he was very hungry. He had not eaten for a long period of time. And I saved him from death. Because of the food I gave him, he did not die. So they came over there in Shemayim, and they have the balance, and they start bringing all the veiras, and the pile gets all my veiras is getting bigger and bigger and bigger. And my mitzvahs, of course, weren't too many. And the pile is very clearly indicating where I'm going. And it comes in, they say, "One second, but he saved this person's life. Every mitzvah the person will now do for the rest of his life is his credit." So they take all of the mitzvahs that this person's going to do the rest of his life, and they put it on my scale. And they say, "One second, but not just him. He's going to have children. And his children are going to have children. And all the generations of all those children, all the mitzvahs that they're going to do will be his credit, because the mitzvahs will not be done were it not for the fact that he had saved this person's life. So we're going to put on the side of his merits every single mitzvah that all of the descendants of this poor man, the hundreds of thousands of people which are going to be his descendants, will all go on to the scale on the side of my merit, and I went straight into Gan Eden." That's the story that he brings. That's the power of the power of tzedakah. Okay, the Shulchan Aruch, when it talks about the mitzvah of tzedakah, the Shulchan Aruch points out that this is a mitzvah where the Torah gave many mitzvahs in conjunction with the mitzvah of tzedakah. Mitzvahs aseh and mitzvahs lois aseh were given in conjunction with the mitzvah of tzedakah. The Torah actually gives four mitzvahs aseh. The Torah gives the mitzvah of nosan titein, you should give, surely give, posayat tiftach, you should surely open your hand, bechazak toboy, you should take hold of him, and bechayichimach, your brother should live with you. The Torah gives negative prohibitions together with the mitzvah of stalker. The Torah gives a prohibition, lo sametz tavavcha, do not harden your heart. Lo sikpet tzayach, do not close your hands. Ayer levavcha besitcha, do not feel bad when you give it to him. It means even if you give him stalker, but you feel bad when you're giving it, I wish I wasn't doing it, why does he bother me? You get an avera. Ayer levavcha besitcha, you should not feel bad when you give it to him. The Torah gives a mitzvah of lending money to a poor person if you can do it in the form of a loan. Have a tapiten, will give him a loan, even if you need to take some type of collateral, you do such. There are many mitzvahs the Torah gives in conjunction with the mitzvah of giving tzedakah. If the person is not able to give tzedakah, the Gemara says in Bava Basra, that if you give tzedakah to an ani, the more makes a list of that you get blessed, many brachas in the Torah. But if you make him feel good, you're fasenim with words. If you're mafias him with words, you make him feel good. Even if you give him nothing, I have nothing to give you, I feel bad, but hopefully it'll get better. I feel for you. And you resonate with the person, you empathize with him. The more says you'll get 11 blessings. The more makes a list of 11 blessings that you will get for the fact that you've given this person, made him feel good. And if you give stalker, you get 5 more. You get 16 blessings for giving your person stalker and doing it in a nice way where you make the person feel good. So it's a tremendous mitzvah. The Shulchan Aruch, when it says the mitzvah of tzedakah, the Shulchan Aruch says there are three levels of how to give tzedakah. There's what's called ayin yafa, the good way of doing it, mita beinonis, the average way of doing it, and what's called the mita, the ayin ra, the person who's the stingy person. What are the three levels? How does the Shulchan Aruch define the three levels? The Shulchan Aruch defines the three levels in the following way. A person who gives 1/5 of his income to tzedakah, that's called ayin yafa. That's called the good way of giving tzedakah. A person who gives meiser, that's called mita beinonis, that's the average way of giving tzedakah. And less than meiser is called ayin ra, is a stingy person. That's how the Shulchan Aruch puts down the three levels. The three levels, again, is 1/5, 1/10, and less than 1/10. The Shulchan Aruch does say that a person cannot give less than a certain amount. There's a minimum that a person must give. In other words, we're leaving you up. You want to be an ayin ra, you can be an ayin ra. There's a minimum a person must give tzedakah per year. And the calculation, which the Shulchan Aruch says, the Aruch HaShulchan explains, it means would be the equivalent of giving one pruta to tzedakah every weekday of the year. So you calculate there's about 300 weekdays in the year between Shabbos and Yom Tov. You subtract all those days, so you leave you with about 300 weekdays approximately, and you'd give one prutza per day. That's the amount that a person has to give. That's the minimum amount that a person has to give per year. A person who's an ani, for even a person who's impoverished himself, has a mitzvah to give tzedakah, and he has this requirement to give a prutza per day. So this minimum amount would apply even to a person who has a status. We'll see later on what the status of an ani is, what makes up the person the status of being impoverished himself. So he's potter, but he has to give this minimal amount. He's potter for meiser. He's not obligated in the concept of meiser, but he is the minimum amount he has to give. The Chofetz Chaim has a sefer called Avas Chesed. Many Svarim, the Chofetz Chaim wrote. The Chofetz Chaim wrote all of his Svarim for practical reason, the issues which had to be addressed, and he wrote the sefer to address these issues. So he wrote a sefer called Avas Chesed, which the topic of the sefer is to go through various mitzvahs of between Adam l'chaveiro, between one man and the other, which things you could do to help other people. There's a section on Bikur Karlim, visiting people which are ill. There's Haknasas Arkim. There's a section on Stokka. And in the section of Stokka, there's a subsection talking about the mitzvah of Meiser. It's a sefer Avas Chesed, Chelut Beis, from Perek Yud Zayin through Perek Aleph Chav Beis, talks about Stokka and Meiser. And he brings there from the Gra. And this, he says, even the measurement of one-fifth, of 20%, doesn't apply if you have a poor man standing in front of you and he needs money. I made my calculation for Meiser for this period of time. I've already given my Meiser for the time, and I'm potter. But the guy standing by your door, you have a mitzvah to give stock at that point in time. The Rambam says that even if I can't give the person anything, a person comes and embarrasses himself, comes for himself, not comes for somebody else. A person comes for himself and knocks at your door, you can't embarrass him. You have to give him something. You have to give him something. You have to give him, it's the pasuk of Mishlei, Ayoshav Dach Nichol. Do not respond to a person who is impoverished in a way that is embarrassing to him. Leave me alone. Get out of here. You have to give him something. Okay, now, just parenthetically, there are scenarios where I heard a maaser from somebody from Rabbeinish, Zichlev Racha, that Rabbeinish said he had the following on hug. There are certain people when you give them a liminal amount, and they don't like it, so they'll give it back to you. It's happened. It happened to me one time. A person came not to my house, it was a buffer in yeshiva. I gave him some money. He said, "There's not enough." He threw it back in my face. So now you have a real problem because you designated this money for tzedakah purposes. But the Ani has refused to accept it. So Rebbeinu Shlitzal said he'd always make a tanai before he gave the money. In case the Ani doesn't accept it, he didn't mean it for tzedakah purposes. He could take it back without any problem. That's, I guess, the chachma of Rebbeinu to figure that one out. Okay, so there is a law. You have to give them something. Obviously, you can't afford more. So this is what you can afford right now. The Shulchan Aruch says, even if I have a fig on me, give him a fig. Give him something. I feel gergas achas. Give him a gergas. Give him something. Give him something. Don't ignore the person. Okay, so there's a halacha of kaimi aniyim. We said that this halacha of one that the Gros says two things. The Gros says that the halacha of the difference between, we say, the mita beninus, the average amount is one-tenth, and one-fifth is considered meritorious. But if there are aniyim in front of you, you must give up to one-fifth becomes required, he says. And if they have a person actually there in front of you, so you have to give them something, even if it's more than one-fifth. What's called in front of you? What's called in front of you? So this is a discussion amongst the Poskim, because once upon a time, before there was the world of telephones and all of the telecommunications that we have, and the postal service was what it was, in front of you meant the guy wandered from town to town, and he came to you. So he's in front of you, you have to give him something. But nowadays, I know about it. I mean, the person sent me a letter. They sent me an email. They posted something on the. Who knows how many different ways I know about it? Is that called lefanav, or is lefanav mean still the person comes and actually in front of me? Then I have a chiyuv to give to him. So this is a machloekus. Whether lefanav means kaimi aniyim means that I'm aware of it, or it means that. That the person actually in front of me, and it's referred to an halacha to try and respond even to that situation that I'm aware of it. Okay. When a person gives stock of the Shulchan Aruch stresses, you should give the stock of a sefer panim yafos. You should give it happily. The Gemara says in Tainus more that the Ani does for the Balabayas, does the Balabayas do for the Ani? The Ani's doing you a favor. The Zohar says that when an Ani knocks on your door, the following is happening. The Zohar says that when an Ani knocks on your door, the following is happening. In Shemayim, they're not really so happy with you. They're not really so happy with you. There's something, you know, they're checking into your file, and you know, it's not, they're not happy. But there's some good angels up there. They say, you know, give the guy a chance. So they send you a present. They send you an Ani. So now you have a chance. They sent you an opportunity to take care of yourself. You give the Ani, you get stalker. So you've taken advantage of that present that you got from Shemayim. They sent you a present caught in the form of a poor person who needs help. So when he's coming to your door, he's doing you a favor. More than you're doing him a favor, the Gemara says, he's doing you a favor. He's saving you from this complaint in Shemayim. So we should do it with every part of the office. Now, obviously, sometimes Hashem wants to test us. And so the Salmanim, which are really easy to give, you know, pleasantly. They're very thankful, respectful. And there's people which are not. So Hashem's giving us a bigger present. You get more reward. The frum tzara agul, according to the difficulty, is the reward. So this fellow, he's pushy, and he says, you know, why don't you give me another check and another check and give me a post-dated check, and that's not enough, and you know, and I really need help, and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. He's pushy. Okay. Now, it doesn't mean you have to give him whatever he asks. You have to make a calculation of what's right and what's wrong, and we'll see what that is, and give him accordingly. But you still have to be pleasant. You know, I'm sorry, I can't help you. I'd love to help you more. I really wish you yada luck. You know, and try and, you know, help him as much as you can. But that's it. But you still have to be pleasant. That's part of the challenge. Can we leave questions to the end, sir? Okay. The Rambam lists that there are eight different levels of giving tzedakah. Eight different levels, preferred levels of giving tzedakah. And the way you go through all of the levels, you see that clearly the point of the Rambam is the less embarrassing and the more comfortable and pleasant it is for the Ani, that's preferred. So the first level, he says, the preferred way of doing it is helping a person out by giving him a job. Helping a person out by making a partner with you. Helping a person out by hiring him. So I need somebody to work in my house, and this fellow says, is good at it, hire him. The Rambam says, that's shot in the Mishnah, in the Mishnah in Ovis, the Niyam should be members of your household. What does it mean to be members of your household? When you need help, you need workers, you need somebody in the house, hire an Ani. This way, you give him a chance that he should get a pranosa, as opposed to hiring, you know, some goy or something like that. To hire a Jewish person who needs help. So v'hiyaniyim b'nei beischo is the preferred way. So if I can do any way, which I can now, can I calculate that to meiser? My roof needs to be fixed. It's leaking, etc. So I have a choice between hiring this Jew who really needs a pranosa. He'll do a decent job. Or I can go out and hire a Merah Roofs or whatever it is. So I hire, you know, Mr. Oni over here as opposed to a Merah Roof. So I can't charge it to the Meister. I'm getting benefit from it. I'm getting my roof for it out of it. So what can I do? So that's clear. If you're offering him above and beyond what would be considered the amount that he would ask for, you can use that extra money for Meister. Okay, that everybody agrees to. Now what about if he's asking a certain amount, which is more than what the standard of the market is, if he's asking for it, and you're hiring him, that's a Machloikus. That's a Machloikus, whether you can calculate that for Meister. Okay, so now, here we mentioned two areas where we have an issue of a Machloikus. So I want to point out an important thing about Meister. We still haven't got the Meister yet, but you know, we're still talking about the mitzvah of tzedakah in a general sense. But when we will talk about Meister, we're going to do Meister bli neder, and we'll talk about why that's so important. Okay. There's a look of demach soroi. When an Ani comes to you, you have to give him according to his needs. And the Gemara says that the person's needs are dependent upon each person. So what for him is considered a standard and something which is necessary and needed doesn't mean it's necessary and needed for me. So I can't judge him according to the Meister. I have to judge him according to his standards. And the Gemara says, if I have a rich person which has certain needs to be able to, you know, because of his status, etc., you have a mitzvah to help him, and that's called a mitzvah. Now, in regards to preferences, it's not necessarily going to be the highest level of preference. In regards to, but there is a mitzvah. I heard a beautiful story back in the early 1990s when they had the big real estate crash up in the New York area. So there's a lot of people, which is very rich people, which went overnight, you know, in a very short period of time, lost tremendous amounts of money. And these people living in these nice big houses who didn't have food for Shabbos. I mean, that was there was the Toib Cheshabbos was delivering discreetly and secretively, was delivering food for these people, these houses, these nice big mansions, and they. So there was one person there in the community, in this community, who was still had not been affected by it, and he was giving these people money that they should have money to give stock. Because you imagine, this is a big, nice big house, you know, so the Mashulah came last year to their house, you know, and they know they get a nice adobe. They come knocking on the door, I'm sorry, I can't help you this year. I'm sorry, I can't help you this year. You know, three, four, five times a day. You know how embarrassing that is? See, so he felt for their pain. So he would give them money discreetly. They should have money to be able to get stuck, or they shouldn't be embarrassed. Because that was their machsaroy, that was their need. Their need was to have, not to be embarrassed. Right? So that's he understood the sensitivity of their needs. So the different levels of the of and that's we go all go into the mitzvah of day machzor, what's necessary for the person. So okay, so now the person has this tremendous need. He needs a surgery. Day machzor shayesol. I have to give money for surgery. Who does is it incumbent upon? Is it incumbent upon me? Is it coming upon the community? Is it coming upon the gabbai? So how do you spread that out? So this is a discussion amongst the poskim, and it seems to be that the final decision in the poskim is it's not an individual responsibility. It's a responsibility which is on the community. I have to give something towards it. I don't have to give the whole amount. One exception would be if I am a person, I'm a very rich person, and I can afford it. B, this person has not yet went to anybody else to ask. He's embarrassed to ask. So by me saying, no, I'm only going to give part, he's going to be forced to go around and embarrass himself and ask everybody. And I can afford to help him, then there's a mitzvah I should help him and take care of him myself. Otherwise, which most of us are not, people in this room are not in that situation, they're not just grappling with those issues. The person comes, he needs $100,000 for a surgery. You know, I don't have $100,000 to give him for surgery. Right? But I have to help him with something. Okay. The Gemara says that you give and give even 100 times. It means the same money comes to me once, twice, three times. I have to keep giving him. So what does that mean? The guy knocks on my door in the morning, the afternoon, the night. It's only if it's a new need. He said, I have no food. I haven't eaten for 2 days. I need food. If it's to give him. Comes tomorrow, I haven't eaten since yesterday morning. Now you have a new need. He said, listen, I need this money for a surgery. Well, you can do yesterday for the money for the surgery. I'm not okay to give a second time because he asked a second time. But I am okay to give a second time if he asks for a new need. That was yesterday's need, was yesterday's breakfast, and now today's need is today's breakfast. He has a right to have breakfast every day, right? He has a right to eat something every day. So he has a right to ask me, and I have a key to give him. When we prioritize our tzedakah money, so in the halacha, we'll see that we're going to go through different levels of what's considered a priority. It doesn't mean, when I say priority, it doesn't mean that I'm not going to give money to the other needs also. It's I'm going to weight my needs more towards. So there are two different definitions of how we weight things. One is by the need, and one is by the individual who's coming to you. What are the needs of what you say? So the highest level of need is something which is a person's life is in danger. So obviously you have responsibility in case with loyal lenders, people who are. The Shulchan Aruch talks about a concept we don't relate to that world, but not too many years ago it existed in this world. Pinyan Shvuyim, a person who's being held by a government, being held by pirates, being held by captive. He needs money. We need money to get him out. Right. So that's his life is in danger. Person is coming. His life is in danger. He needs a surgery. He needs he's ill. Person doesn't have food. His family doesn't have food. Achasna. Shulchan Aruch says that a chasna, to help a young woman or a young man make a chasna, is the equivalent of life-threatening. Leaving a person in a situation where they cannot get married, they cannot afford to get married, is the equivalent of a life-threatening situation. The next level down is to give, and this is the Chofetz Chaim says, the main purpose why Chazal made the concept of meiser, of money, tithing money, giving one-tenth, was for people which are poor, which are tamid chachamim, to support people to be able to learn Torah. That was the main reason why it was created. At that level, you have a person who's a poor person, and he's a Talmud Chacham, and you're supporting Torah. The next level is supporting Torah in general. You're supporting Torah in general. Not necessarily for a person who's poor. Donate to yeshiva, etc. There are a few more levels down, but in order to understand the second issue, we have to look at who is the person. The Torah says there's a nedivus to a relative gets a preference. A family member gets a preference before other people. A person from your city gets a preference over people from other cities. People from Eretz Yisrael get a preference before over other cities. I live in Silver Spring, so people from Silver Spring get my preference. The Shach says that goes first, and then Ani Yerushalayim, and then the Niyam of other cities in Eretz Yisrael, and then the Niyam of other cities in America. That's order of preference. So now I have a situation where I have a relative who's poor, who's not a Talmud Chacham, and I have a Talmud Chacham who's poor, who's not a relative. So that there I have a question, who goes first? That we paskin that a relative who's poor goes first before a person who's Talmud Chacham who's not a relative. The Chofetz Chaim says that you should take some of your money from Meister and use it for a gemach, for a free loan fund. If there's a free loan fund out there, you should contribute to it. If there's none out there, and you can afford to make one, you should set aside from your Meister, each time you take Meister, a certain amount until you get in a large enough sum that you feel you're able to create something which will be able to use as a free loan fund. If you feel you can't do that, you cannot make that enough, get other people to join you and create a free loan fund. It says the power of that is, this is a mitzvah stokah, which is constant. And the money's not used up. You can lend it, and you can lend it, and lend it again. And you should give it to somebody who's to run it, who is competent, obviously. There are, locally, two gemachim, which are people can contribute to. So now, the next step down is to support Torah. It's important to understand that this is an issue which I've heard more than one speaker in the different shiurim that I've heard over the years on the topic of tzedakah complain about this issue, and some issue which I brought up. People understand the mitzvah of supporting the most dose of Torah, the institutions of Torah in one's city belong to every single person in the city, not only to the people which are parents there. I don't have kids old enough. I don't have to give yet. When I'm going to be old enough, I'll give my tuition and I'll pay my dues. And now, Baruch Hashem, I graduated my last kid. Now I'm parted from giving to the institutions because I paid my dues. I gave a lot of money all those years. I should get more money now? Yes. You should get more money now. There's a common obligation to make sure that there is in your city the institutions which will be able to teach Torah to the members of the people. So it applies to grandparents, it applies to young people, it applies to people who have children, people who don't have children, it applies to everybody. There's a responsibility to support the institutions of Torah in your city. How do you divide up between Aniyah Irka and Aniyah of other cities? How do you divide it up? So I've seen two suggestions by the Poskim. One suggestion is 50-50. Or 51-49. You bulk of your money should be given locally. I'll pass around later on that in 2002, the Rabbanim of Baltimore got together and they came up with a formula how to calculate that to make sure that 50%, over 50% of your money is going to be spent locally. I actually heard a shiur from one of the Rabbanim up in Rabbi Sulchanan in YU, Rabbi Hershel Schechter. He says it should be 66-33. 66%, 66%, two-thirds should be local, and one-third is going to be out of the city. Okay. Now let's talk about the lachas of Meiser. The Chofetz Chaim says when you give Meiser, a person should give Meiser, he should give one-tenth. He should give it, preferably he should give it as an actual amount, not 1/11th and not 1/9th, but specifically 1/10th. 1/10th, the Chazal gave a number 1/10th. When you give 1/10th, what's happening, he says, is that you and your Kodesh Baruch are becoming partners in the business. Bereshim gets 1/10th of the profits, you get 9/10ths of the profits. So you make a Kodesh Baruch as a partner. It's a very good idea to make a Kodesh Baruch a partner in your business. You cannot go wrong when a Kodesh Baruch is a partner in your business. It should be 1/10th and 9/10ths. When do you have to give Meiser? How often do you have to calculate Meiser? So this is a Machlokes and a Halacha, and we follow the Beim Tzadok follows the opinion which says that Meiser should be calculated at least once a year. Which means the person gives Tzedakah the whole year on the understanding he's giving it towards his Meiser. One time a year he sits down and he takes a calculation of what I've given the year, how much I earned, how much I'm obligated in Meiser. I see the difference. And if I owe any money to Meiser, I will give Meiser at that point in time. There are some opinions which say the Chavos Yoreh says it should be done once every 6 months, possibly once every 3 months. There are some opinions that it should be done constantly. As soon as money comes in, it should be done. Okay. Now, what is Chayiv and Meiser? What income is called income, which is a mitzvah to give Meiser of? over here. Just make sure I don't miss anything over here. So the most obvious thing is the person's salary. Person's salary it would be something which a person has to give miser from. Any interest the person is making, when the person is credited that interest, he has to take miser from that. Person gets dividends in stocks. Let's say a stock appreciates, but he doesn't actually get that. He hasn't sold out that piece of stock. It appreciated in value. He has nothing from that yet. He didn't receive that. So then he would not have to give miser. So now, if your arrangement is that your dividends are immediately are going to be reinvested. Thank you. That's what I was trying to find. Reinvested. So is that considered that you received that? So the person say yes, because that you made a decision to reinvest it. Whereas appreciation, you haven't received yet. Employer benefits. The employer pays for your health insurance. The employer pays for a retirement account. The employer pays for are miserable. So many people have a great idea. They come home with their paycheck. They have the paycheck is let's say for argument's sake, each paycheck they get paid twice a month. Each paycheck is $1,000, hopefully more. Right. So they say, good, $100 goes straight. Well, that's not correct, because that paycheck without $1,000 is but you forgot about the employer benefits that you received, and you forgot about the money that you contributed to your health account, your health insurance, and the money that you put into your retirement account, and the money you put into the child care, which there are many other things which are there. All those are miserable. Those any money that you're putting away yourself, even though you're not seeing it, you're putting it away immediately, is miserable, and any money which the employer is paying for you for that purpose is miserable. A person gets a present of money. So a present of money is miserable. That a person should take miser from any presents of money. But the person gets an object. Person gives me says, I know that you're a connoisseur, you're a lover of art, and I'm going to buy you this beautiful painting. So I wasn't planning to buy that painting. So I'm not going to give miser something I wasn't planning to spend on. But I would have bought it. So then I gained money. But I would have bought the cheaper version, and they bought me the very nicer version. So I would give myself the amount of money I would have spent on it. So a person buys me something of that sort. So that's something which is very, young couples especially, when they get married, people are giving them presents, etc. Those presents are miserable. Let's say a person gives you money, and he says it's specifically earmarked for a certain purpose. The father says, okay, listen, I want you to buy a car. Here's $5,000 to help you pay for the car. That money is not miserable. Because the person gave it specifically for that purpose. Well, you're going to take out $500. He didn't give it to you for that, to spend $500 on stock. He gave you $5,000 to spend on a car. So he said that's what he wants you to do with it, and not something else. Then you cannot do something else with it. You have no right to spend that money on something else. There are some places which disagree with that, but that's something which you can rely on. Okay. Let's say a fascinating question which comes up. Okay, so let before we get to that. So what are valid deductions? What are valid deductions? Okay, I'm making X amount of money. I have expenses. Are expenses, do we deduct expenses before miser or after miser? So now it's a fascinating question that the Chavisyar was asked this question by a person named Rav David Oppenheim. He says, well, let's go back. The paradigm for miser is miser tavua. Is the tithing of the person's produce. There's no halacha of expenses over there. Person, listen, I spent a lot of money in buying that seed to put into the ground. So before I put 50 bushels of seed into the ground. So before we take miser, let's take 50 bushels to the side. They're not part of the. There's no such halacha. You take miser, everything which grew. There's no deductions on miser tavua, on miser of produce. So are there deductions on miser of ksafim? So the person who asked the question, the Chavis Yor, says, I believe that there should not be. So the Chavis Yor says, no, that there is. And he said that the argument why that there is because when the seed goes into the ground, this is the way he's, we know there's a process, but as far as we're concerned, the seed is gone. And now a brand new thing came out of its place, this plant, with this, what it produced. So it's a brand new thing, it's Chayv and Meiser. The money is not brand new. There is money which you clearly spent on this purpose. You see the money going in, you see the money coming out, you can see where it went, you can see what it bought with it, etc. So you can't deduct it. So any money that you spend to make money, is deductible from your income. Okay, so for example, woman goes to work, she needs a babysitter. She can't go to work without a babysitter. She needs childcare. That money will be deductible from your income. So it costs you $2,000 a month, and hopefully not that much, to send your kids to child care. Right? So that you subtract from your income before you take a miser. You say, well, I made X amount of money, I deduct $2,000, and then I take miser from the remainder. Person has to travel for the purpose of business. The cost of the travel would be deductible. The person says, I'm going to. I'm paying for college. Well, how do I make money? Because I went to college and I got a degree and I became a psychologist, and therefore I supported my family because I spent all this money becoming a psychologist. So the cost of going to college, is that deductible for miser? So the answer is yes and no. If when you went to college originally, you thought, had that in mind, that I'm going to accept the cost of college for my miser, against my miser, that would be valid. But once you did it already, now you owe money to somebody. Okay, let's go backwards. There's no backwards. You did it already. But if when you before you went to college, right, you had that in mind, that you're planning to do that, so that would be valid. Taxes, any type of payroll taxes, which are the Social Security, etc. That's what the government charges you in this country to allow you to make money over here. That's called a valid deduction when you would subtract from your income, and that would not be miserable. You would not need to take miser from that. Okay. Question which comes up is if a person has income from one area and has a loss somewhere else. He has two businesses. He has two businesses that he's running. One business is making profits, so he has to take miser in that. The other business is running at a loss. So the IRS allows you to subtract your losses from business B against your income from business A. So you didn't make any money this year, so I have nothing, right? Well, do we look at it like that? And we say, listen, you know, business A made money. So you made money. You got to take a miser. Business B had a loss. I had a loss. We give you a blessing that you should, Hashem should fill up your loss, but you're still chayav in miser. So that's the question. This is a machlokes, and since the Night of Yehuda says that we calculate miser once a year, as opposed to constantly as it comes in, so you're allowed to subtract one against the other. Because according to the Night of Yehuda, I haven't gotten income yet. My income is decided once a year. What my income was? Well, at the end of the year there wasn't income because these two businesses, one caused a loss against the other. The Chavos Yoreh says if I would specifically up front say this is the date that I'm going to calculate my income, so therefore as far as I'm concerned I didn't receive anything yet until that point in time, and then you calculate and see what your losses and your gains were at that point in time, so I set up a date up front, everybody would agree that I can subtract the loss against the gain. So that's a better way of doing it. What about household expenses? And this is the famous question: what about household expenses? Listen, I gotta live. Okay, so can I subtract household expenses before I calculate miser? I need $50,000 to live for a year. I make $55,000. Okay, so I have $5,000, which is miserable. I owe $500. Is that correct? Or do you say no? That I made $55,000. I owe $5,000 of miser. I have $50,000 to live on, and Baruch Hashem, I have enough to live on. So this is the majority of the person say you cannot subtract household expenses. The one exception, the person who is himself is poor, a person who's poor is not chayav and miser. Well, maybe what you should do, this person who's poor, who's not chayav and miser, if he could subtract his household expenses and look at the remainder that he has, he'd be able to have a little bit to give, he should give that and use calculate miser based on that. Am I making sense? Yeah? Okay? Dine Weiss has the following question. Dine Weiss, okay, so a person, let's say for argument's sake, he needs $50,000 to live for the year. He makes $52,000. Okay, so 10% of $52,000, right, $5,200, if he gives that to tzedakah, he will drop below the amount of money he needs to live on and help be an ani himself. So what does he do in that situation? So he says in that situation he should set aside the money and give $2,200 to tzedakah and take the other $3,000 for himself. He's an ani. He's a poor person. He's a poor person is allowed to take miser. Okay, what can I spend miser on? So we said before, of course, the needs of tzedakah, the person's life is endangered, supporting a Talmud Chacham who's poor, supporting Torah in general, all those are valid uses of tzedakah, any person who's poor, etc. What about, and this is the question which comes up, can I use it for, there are halachas in the Gemara where the Gemara calls something tzedakah. For example, the Gemara says that the din of the Gemara, person does not have to support their children after the age of 7. At the age of 7, you listen, kids, you know, nice knowing you. You know, you know, you, when you come home to sleep, but you don't go out and make a living. So the Gemara says, if you support your kids afterwards, it's called tzedakah. So I can use Meiser for that. Right? That should be true. So the person is saying, no, if you're ready to say that, but you're not going to say that. You know the papers, I mean, town's going to give you, you know, you're going to be blacklisted in town. The guy threw his kids out. He was made to go to work. You know, you're not going to do it. You're not going to do it. It means you would spend the money anyway. Meiser cannot be used for money you have to spend anyway, or you're going to spend anyway. So you're not going to spend the money. You're not going to, I wouldn't do it, but now they're Meiser. Okay, now I'll consider taking care of them. That's not true. You're not going to do it either way. You're going to support your kids. Same thing when it comes to teaching your children Torah. Schar limud. So Shulchan Aruch says schar limud. I'm a chuyav and a locha to pay for the cost of teaching my child mikra. Chumash and Novi. If he's a kid who knows more, it's proper that I should also. It's proper. Oh, it's proper. It's not the chuyav. So I want to pay for my kid's tuition with Meiser money. So Rav Moshe has a tshuva, he says, and nowadays it sits, there are laws that you cannot, you know, the truancy laws. You can't leave your kid without an education. So you have to give him an education. You have to give him an education, you have to give him a Torah education. So you're not sending him to public school. That's not an option. Rav Moshe says that's not an option. Because the chiyuv of teaching him emunah and Torah, etc., would require that you have to keep, so you have to teach him to this yeshiva. You have to send him to yeshiva. He says, however, let's say there's two yeshivas available. One yeshiva costs $15,000 a year, and the one costs $16,000 a year. I want the better yeshiva, going to cost more. The extra $1,000 I can take from Meiser. That's money I'm spending extra. I didn't have to do that, my extra money. So the extra money which I'm going to give beyond, above and beyond the extra expense, I can take that from Meiser. Once a child is beyond truancy laws, So the question which comes up is paying for seminary for girls, right? They passed truancy laws. The truth is, even truancy laws until 16, I think. They don't have to graduate, right? So the last 2 years of school, he says. So the Chazan says, anything you're going to be doing anyway, you can't be taking from Meiser. So until 18, everybody's doing that. And if you're in a community where everybody sends their kids to yeshiva, beyond that, again, you're going to be doing that. In a place where they're not, and you said, you know what, let's do it. At a chalami, you could, at that point in time, if you had in mind when you made that decision that you're going to use Meiser, you could use Meiser for that purpose. Rav Moshe has interesting tshuva. I want to put money away away to support my children in Karlo. I want to support my children in Karlo. So I can't afford to support my kids in Karlo, but I can give Meiser. They're people learning Torah, and they don't have any money. I mean, they're looking for me for support, so they consider impoverished, they're poor people. So you're allowed to support your children in Karlo from Meiser. He says you should not use more than half of your Meiser money for that purpose. Can I put money away? Okay, no, kids, he's 2 years old, you know, Bez Hashem, one day he'll be learning in Karlo. Let's not put money away for him. So what's considered a valid age that I can do that? The answer is an age where I would normally start thinking about it. I've been, you know, I'm this, you know, penny pinching guy. So I'm thinking about it, you know, when he's 2 years old. The average person says he's 18 already. Start thinking about, you know, how you pay for yeshiva, chasna, karlo. You know, start thinking about when he's 10 years old. Wow, chasna expenses. I mean, you know, maybe now as we do, I don't know. But now, at the normal age, when you start thinking about it, that's when you can start putting money. You can start actually making a bank account. Part of your Meiser money can go into that account and put away to support. Rav Moshe says to support your children learning Torah. If you can afford to do it without that, he says you should not do that. But the only way you can afford to do it is with Meiser. That's what Meiser is made for. He's a relative, he's an ani, and he's a Talmid Chacham, hopefully. Right? Right? So, go for it. What's called an ani? So the Shulchan Aruch gives a very clear definition of an ani, but the problem is the Shulchan Aruch definition doesn't work nowadays. The Gemara gives a definition. Gemara says a person who has 200 zoos. He owns 200 zoos per person, or he has 50 zoos which he's doing business with. What was the 200 zoos represent? 200 zoos represented the cost, the Gemara says, of one person living for 1 year, all of his expenses. Food, shelter, clothing. That was one person. So the person he has in his bank account, 200 zoos, he has that amount of money, he's not an ani anymore. He's less than that, he's called an ani. Or he doesn't have 2,000, but he has an ongoing, he has a steady income. I don't have a lot of money in the bank, but I got a job.
I'm not a nani.
Okay, but the job that I have doesn't cover my expenses for the year. I can't support myself and my three kids. My wife and my three kids with this money that I'm making. So then you're a nani. Then you're a nani. Well, what's called support? I can live on bread and water. Right? If we don't drive a car, we walk everywhere, and we only eat bread and water, and we make sure we only turn the lights on from ten to 11 at night, we can make it. And no air conditioning. No, what's considered a normal way to live in that community? That's if a person cannot meet that standard, he has a lach of an on. Person has a decent amount of money, okay, but all of a sudden somebody's very ill, and he has a need which is an exceptional need. And he has no money for that. So in regards to that need, he's considered a nani. And you can use stalker money for that purpose. Okay. You cannot use stalker money, meiser money, for anything which you're mechuyev to give. So one of the questions which comes up is a fascinating. The Hebrew Academy sent out recently, right? This meiser form is called Form 613. And while you're calculating your 1040, you might as well also calculate your meiser. And then, of course, they give you what's your income, what's valid adjustments, and tzedakah contributed. So they write, line A is to your shul, line B is to the Melbourne J. Berman Hebrew Academy. How much? And then you say, okay, how much have you given? So they put in parentheses other than dues. Shul contributions other than dues. Because that's a chayv that I'm paying. I'm paying up a chayv. I have a chayv to be a member of the shul. And can you use my money to pay dues? So Rav Eder Zatzal held the following: any financial benefit that you got from becoming a member, a real benefit, you cannot calculate that as miser money. So I have a child that's 3 years old. I want to put my child into the Shomrei nursery. They give a discount for members per child. I don't know, $300. $300. That $300, I get financial benefit. I became a member. I got money. So that I cannot use for miser money. The remainder of that, if the dues are $900 and the benefit is $300, it's $600, it's miserable. Okay, I get a discount on the Rosh Hashanah seats. That's also worth money. So I get anything which I'm getting a benefit, I'm using the Shomrei. I happen to make my simple this year. I'm using the Shomrei Hall. This is a discount for members. So all of those financial benefits that I get, but since there's no tangible benefit that you get other than that, I'm a member of the shul. So I can take the seat and walk out with it. You know, that's my seat. I bought a seat. I don't have anything. A guy walks in and says, you're not a member, you can't sit down. You're not a member. I mean, that's not true. So I don't really get a real benefit. So you go, I'm a chuyiv to give. Once upon a time, a person lived in a city, and there was piyuv that a person had to give. The same person, a chuyiv to give to a shul. We would like to say that, if we're a bonim, like to say that, but they can't. We have to give. So this opinion, other than dues, is limited according to him. This psak is a rebride with this psak. It says over here, these reviews approved by the Rabbi Breidowitz. He says you can't use them for dues at all. Okay, so that's an interesting machlokes out there. Okay, chazamim and tzedakah don't give more than a fifth. So don't give more than a fifth. More says because right now you want to give you feel like you want to give a lot of money. You're very inspired. The rabbi came and he spoke to you, and you're just ready to go, just ready to pour out. The Torah is saying, look, I don't have any money. I ran out of money. Now what am I supposed to do? Okay, so chazamim and tzedakah don't give more than a fifth. This is called tzedakah usha. Now, there are some exceptions to tzedakah usha, and I want to read you those exceptions. I've got a list of it. I can find the page. Of course, I can't find it when I need it. Here we go. Here it is. Some of them are mentioned in the Shulchan Aruch, some are mentioned in other places. The first one is your person's about to die. So, excuse me, don't give a lot of more than a fifth, because you might be impoverished, and what do you do tomorrow? I says, I'm not living here tomorrow. I'm gone tomorrow. You want to give up to, now, how much? The person should not, it suggests not to give more than 50%, because you'll leave something for his kids, unless he's a very wealthy person. Number two, he's an exceptionally wealthy individual. The guy's really wealthy. He's worth a billion. He's a billionaire. So he said, oh, wow. Never, he gives $500 million to Stalker. What's he going to live on? He only has $500 million left. That's not what we're worried about. That's not what Chazal we're worried about. Okay. We mentioned before, if a person's present in front of you, there's no limit of it. You have to give them something. There's no limit of it. I gave one-fifth already. Pikuach nefesh. So, if the person feels that his life is in danger, and he wants exclusive stock. He says, no, it's not more than a fifth. If you had a surgery that you needed, you'd pay more than a fifth for the surgery. You can't live in more than... What's going to be? You'll pay for the cost, whatever is necessary. The person needs to hire a lawyer, otherwise he's going to jail for the next one as how long. The lawyer's going to cost him half of all his money. He'll pay for the half of the money. What'll be? You'll worry about it. So you want to have a schusa, you want to go into that court case, you want a schusa giving stucco. I'm sorry, no, can't get more than a fifth. No, that's not fair. If you recognize the power of stucco, you can get more than a fifth. A person is a spendthrift. The guy, he rolls out money, he spends money on anything. Chofetz Chaim says, he spends money like, credit card, Baruch Hashem, nowadays, if people have credit cards, they can spend. Stucco, I'm sorry, you have to care how you get stucco. Everything else the guy spends without any calculations, he doesn't care. It comes with stucco, it has to be calculated. No, you're allowed to give more stucco than a fifth. If that's how you live, you can give a stucco more than a fifth. A person has a steady income. I'm going to make some. I mean, right now, maybe in our society nowadays, it's not so simple to say that anymore, but once upon a time, everybody had a steady income. They had a steady income. I got a job. So I'll spend the money now. I know I'm making more money tomorrow. And I'm not worried about that. I know I have income coming in tomorrow to replace that which I spent today. Supporting Torah. Yisarchu Zvulun. So there's a concept called Yisarchu Zvulun relationship where the people come in partnership. One person learns and one person works and supports. So the Ramosha Pasen is that the correct way to do a Yisarchu Zvulun is 50-50. A proper Yisarchu Zvulun, and he said the only way it's considered a valid Yisarchu Zvulun, if you do 50-50. Where half of the income that you get goes to the other person. It's more than a fifth. So this is not stalker. This is a business deal. Rabbi Chaim Belosher actually would write up a contract that the arrangement is it's a contract, and I get in Shemayim half the reward. It's a deal. I'm buying real estate. This is the real estate. There's no better investment than the Yisrael Zvulun. The Baal HaTanya says that a person's a Baal Aveira and he wants a kapora. Whatever you need, you need a kapara, the Shemayim, they're upset with you. I want to give stucco to protect myself. So if you're a Baal Aveira, you want to give more, there's no limit of the Kanazusha. So I think Baal HaTanya basically took the Kanazusha and basically wrote it off. I mean, I don't know about you, but it's not negated to me anymore, the Kanazusha, because I'm a Baal Aveira, and I need kapara, so I want to give more than a fifth, because I need kapara, so you want to give more than a fifth. Okay. The Shulchan Aruch says you want to give to an oni, you should give to a person, what's a person's a Baal Aveira, a person does Aveiras, a person doesn't keep the mitzvahs. Do you have responsibility giving stock to such a person? So Shulchan Aruch says no. A person doesn't keep mitzvahs, and you're not mechiv to him. Mechiv is to somebody who is a reacha, one of your friends. It means that we keep, he's your reah, which means we keep the mitzvahs together. Comes the Chazon Ish says that was only the time of the Shulchan Aruch. Nowadays we don't have people. Many people don't keep Torah mitzvahs, but they don't know better. You've spoken to them. You really know how to speak to them. Maybe somebody else knows how to speak to them. Speak to them. If you speak to them properly, maybe they would be able to recognize the importance of Torah mitzvahs. So nobody's ever considered a person who knowingly is doing something wrong. He doesn't know. That's not what the Shulchan Aruch is talking about. It's not a person who knows that it's wrong, and he really doesn't care. He's totally aware. He lived in the society, back 400 years ago. Everybody kept Torah mitzvahs. This guy says, I'm not interested. He walks out, So I'm not going to support him. Now you want to leave, walk out. I don't have to care your needs anymore. That's not my responsibility. But Rav Moshe says in the tshuva though that you have to be careful because if you're supporting an institution which teaches people that to throw off Torah mitzvahs, then why are you supporting that? Why are you supporting something which is teaching to go against the Torah mitzvahs? So they don't know better. But fine, so I'm not faulting them, but why am I supporting it? Why am I giving them, helping them that they should be doing this? So Russia says you shouldn't be doing that. Okay, I think I've covered everything I wanted to cover. I want to apologize, I didn't realize that there's not going to be any air conditioning in here. It's quite hot in here, I apologize. And I'm quite impressed that everybody's able to stay awake. I want to share with you two things. Three things. First of all, I want to point out that we got this thing called the Meiser form. This came out in 1984, this idea that the Academy did, and actually it does, it's line by line with the 1040. It shows, the 1040 of those days was this big. And it shows you how, which ones are valid, which are not valid for MISA purposes. It's out of print. Someone wants to borrow it, look at it, you can borrow it. Please don't lose it, because I almost lost it once. Came back in 3 years later after I lent it out. Is this yours? I said, yeah. I remember who was taking it. A few years ago, the Rheingold did the following. A lot of people knock on the door. And you know, person knocks on the door, you want to give them something, you know. And it hit me at some point in time, I'm giving a lot more money to the people on the door than I really want to give. I want to give a lot more of my money than I'm giving locally. So I want to take control of my miser, of my stock of giving. So the time when it hit me was when I was doing my taxes and I was calculating how much I'm doing my deductions and, you know, doing my mortgage deduction and my business expenses and my charitable. And I said, wow, a lot of things to go to Sisra. Right? Baruch Hashem, a good Sisra is very nice. They do a job for us for checking the people to verify that they're valid, that their needs are valid. And they give some type of understanding of what level of validity they think it is, and they help us with that. But a lot of checks were going out to there, and I wasn't really happy with the fact that all the money was going there and not my local. I said, you know, okay, I know how much I'm giving per year, basically. All right, I know how much I'm giving per year. Let's see how I would like to divide it up in the way that I would like to spend it between my local institutions and institutions which I have a moral obligation to give. I lived in the Tel Shishiva for 23 years. I never paid a penny of tuition. I couldn't afford it. When I was old enough, I did work study. You know, I was old enough, I gave money to Shiva that way. I did Pell Grants, but believe me, they spent a lot more money on me than I want to give them something back. And even if they paid full tuition, I mean, I learned at an institution for 23 years. I should give them something, right? So I made a list of places, and then there were, over the years, as we grew up in Yeshiva, there were different announcements, proclamations by the leaders of the generation, the Gedolim. There's certain institutions which they perceived as national institutions that we should be supporting. Torah schools for Israel, Chinuch HaTzmoy. Chinuch HaTzmoy, when we were younger, there was a very big stress by the Gedolim that this is an institution which should be supported by all of Klal Yisrael. Right? That the reason why there is, Baruch Hashem, we have the Frum ones and the Chedorim, etc. But the people out there in Israel which need to have a vehicle of learning Torah, which is with some secular education, etc., and they should have a form which is true to Torah. So, the government is minimally supporting it. They're giving some very basic needs, and the rest is covered by us. So the government said that it has to be supported by. So I want to make sure I'm giving money to these things. So I made my list of where I'm giving. Where I like to give. I came up with, okay, after everything is said and done, I'm willing to designate X amount of money. It's discretionary money. Discretionary money will be used for the people knocking on my door and letters that I get in the mail. I'll send the letters once a month. I send the letters. Now, preference between a person knocks on the door, a person sends me a letter. A person knocks on my door, especially if it's coming from himself, a person. I give that preference because the person is embarrassing coming. Weight that more than going to wait a letter that I get in the mail. So I did that, and I've been much happier. So each month, at the end of the month, we take out. Okay, you know, we're giving X amount of money per month. So I redid. I took out the amounts that I had put in. It's none of your business. One zero is left over there. Just by mistake, I forgot to take it out. And I left, a number. I put a number in for example. What you want to do with discretionary money? So I just read you. You don't have to follow my list. It's just an example of what I did. So the first thing is I give to Yeshiva of Greater Washington. I'm an employee. I benefit from it, and I think it's something to give to. My children went to Torah School of Greater Washington. I support that institution. There is a Keren Achesed of Greater Washington, which takes care of people which are in the community which are impoverished. I want to give money to that. There's the Carlos Chronomer, which is the Yeshiva's Carlo, which I support. There's the Mikvah Muna Society. There's the Carlo of Greater Washington and White Oak. I would like to get some money in there also. It's a local institution. I'd like to support that. Young Yisrael Shomrei Emun, I give money to. And then I have Torah Schools for Israel, American Israeli Torah Center, Pilim Lev La'achim, Shuvah Chazan Avram. These are all things which, over the years, the Gedolim said should be supported by Klal Yisrael. Okay, now I'm a businessman. I want to buy some real estate. I want to have a little bit of money in Mir Yerushalayim. If you want to have, you want to pick a yeshiva, which you want to have some money in Mir Yerushalayim, I think it's a good investment. Yeshiva's got over 5,000 students. I think there's a lot of Torah learning over there. I want to have a portion in it. Right? BMG, based on Shkavoya Lakewood. I want to have a portion of based on Shkavoya. I got to invest my money. This is my money. I'm taking it with me after 120 years. I want to invest it properly. Okay? So, and then I have my discretionary money. So I made a few copies. You can pass it around to look at it. The second thing I want to share with you, you can just pass that around. Something else to look at it. Again, this is a suggestion, but the idea, I think, is something which people should really consider very strongly. The second thing I want to share with you, the formula that the Baltimore Rabbanan used for this idea of keeping the money locally. And they divided a person's... I also had a few copies. We'll pass it around. Some people will just look at it. I didn't make it enough to take it home. Someone wants to take it home to make more copies. One over here. So their suggestion is that 50% should be kept locally. So we're going to divide the stock into three areas. The first area of stock which they divide is called in-town. And 1/3 of your money should be given in-town right away. The second area of stock means what they're doing is they're doing two calculations simultaneously. One is 50 out of 100, and one is 1/3, 1/3, and 1/3. And the goal is to keep the two balanced. The second area of your stock, you give 33%, you give in town immediately. The second area of calculation is your moral obligations. Moral obligations are the institution that you studied in, the institution that your children studied in. You benefited from, so you should be giving something back to them. A moysid which one of your relatives is benefiting from. A moysid which is directed by a relative of yours, and you feel responsible to help them. So 1/3 of your money should be going to that, they suggest. 1/3 of your money should be going to that. And the other third is discretionary. But the middle section, not always are those moral obligations local. If the moral obligations are local, so you're going to end up with more than 50% local. So good. If those moral obligations are not local, you should be losing more of your discretionary funds locally then. So you always end up with 50% local, and you're meeting your three different areas of obligation, your local institutions, your moral obligations institutions, and your discretionary fund, which can be used for other areas. But you still end up with 50. And they the year after they did this, they sent around a new movement to get people to sign. People were going to commit to sign. They're giving 51% locally. People are going to make a commitment to keep. And this way, the schools of the city will have... Again, the people supporting this, the main problem is the organizations in the city need money. And that's not responsibility of the community. That's what the Devan Yircha means, that people in the community should take care of the needs of the community. I don't have any kids in that school, so what? That school should exist. Children of your community are being taught there. Bikur Charlim, Mikvah, Hatzalah, whatever those things are, they need money. And that's helping the community. I never benefited from it, so what? But that's part of my, as a member of the community, I have the responsibility. So that's the goal that we want to understand, is that the person understands that we do have a very strong responsibility for the local moses. One last thing, what's called local? So the question, in some sense, I don't think it's such a strong question. You know, basically, the schools are clearly, you know, belong to the community. Most of the other moses belong to the community. I don't think they have a chiyuv to support Chabad of Fairfax. And that's the regards to the shul-wise, that's a different community. That's a different community. So the question comes up, you live in a city like New York, okay, local institutions, you know, like, support your local institutions, you know, so the 4 million local institutions, you know, right? Your local aniyim, you know, half of New York is under the poverty line, that's my local aniyim, right? It's not a very clear definition of what's called local. You live in Omaha, Nebraska, I think it's very clear what's called local. I don't think we have a problem with that. So the challenge is a place like that. So some people suggest in a place like New York, some say it just means local. You're in New York, this is New York. Right? Some say it means the people that you have some level of interaction with. That's called local. Once upon a time, local, you know, you picture local, right? Local, what was local? You know, you go back to the shtetl, so it was you and your, the 20 or 30 of the families living in the shtetl. That was local. And those are the local aniyim, and there was the local impoverished aniyim, and there was the hektish, the cake, you know, it was very clear what local was. The moses that you interact with, the neighbor that you live in, the shuls near you, etc., that would be called local. But beyond that, it gets, you know, I might live in Flatbush, that I have to support Tarvier of Satmar Williamsburg is maybe stretching it a little bit. I'm not really, you know, my kids aren't learning in Satmar, my grandkids aren't learning in Satmar, I don't think. Right? You know, like, Pashas, I'm not going to be saying, Satmar is not where I'm going to be putting my money. I have nothing against Satmar. Satmar is a beautiful institution. But, you know, Satmar has, Satmar people taking care of Satmar. They don't need Eli Rangel taking care of Satmar. You know, similarly, you know, that understanding that the responsibility is on, there's a community there taking care of it. So that shouldn't be my, I have responsibility to take care of things which my community needs me that much more for. So that's something to keep into consideration, that idea of, the point over here of local means things that you are one that's responsible for. There's nobody else out there doing it. They should. Who's they? They is you. We should be taking care of this. The local schools, we should be taking care of. The parent body, why the parent body? This is the responsibility of the community. Can't stress that enough. Thank you very much for coming, and I can take any questions now. Yeah, and anyone has to leave, please feel free to leave.
So, can I hold off on using up the, like, you know, there's 10%, 20%. Can I hold up on using that up until the end of the year? Because, you know, you said if there's a pressing need in front of you, Bethana.
Yes, you should, if you have money available to give, and there's no need there, you have to give.
Okay.
Or there's a need.
But you could hold off until the end of the year to use up the 10, 20% so that you don't go over in total.
Correct.
Okay. Can I ask you another
question? Yes.
I don't carry cash. I just carry credit cards, and when I'm in Yerushalayim, people are always asking for money. Do I have an obligation to carry cash on me, Davka? Because I know people are going to ask me for money.
You should. It, you know, the place where you believe that people are going to approach you, you should have money, because there is a mitzvah of Yeshu Dachniklam. You shouldn't ignore them. So, I do want to point. Okay, let's talk about Aniyim. The law is like this: a person comes and says, "I need food." You don't ask any questions. Well, let's see. Do they really need food or not? Meanwhile, who knows what's going to happen to the guy? You know, it's the story of Lachamish Gamz, where the guy's going to expire on the spot. The Gemara says, well, I guess I need clothing. So let's see if you need clothing. The Gemara says, we pass in your boydik. The person asks for mezonos. We're not boydik. We don't ask any questions. The person says, I need clothing. We ask questions. So here, it's very easy. They go to Baltimore. They check it out over there. Is this a valid need? Yes, it's a valid need. We can find. I'm walking down the street to Yerushalayim. He goes over there. He says, I need, you know, mehechatesi you need. So I'm not going to give him large sums of money. I can't ignore him. I should give him something. Mm-hmm. I don't give him large sums of money. So I'm telling you, I need for this and another thing. You know, if you bring me a letter from some rabbi which says that I'm going to give, right? Now, I'm not saying a person shouldn't be a nice person and give. You know, if you feel you want to give, you can give. But you know, you're not mechuyev to give large sums of money. You're mechuyev to give him something. So the guy asks, you should give him. You give him. I mean, now some of them might not be happy with the amount that you gave them. So that's why you made that sort of banish made the Tanai when he gave the money that they throw back at him. So it won't be chayv in my. It won't be slug. Yeah, is that clear? Yeah.
So the chi of Meisers.
Oh, thank you. That's a good question.
Where does it come from?
Okay, thank you. Thank you. I wanted to cover that, and it was on my list, and I skipped it. I said, I'm going to get back to that. I'll never get back to that. That's a very good question. What is the chi of Meisers? Yeah, now we're going to talk about why you're chayv in Meiser. It's a three-way machlokes is why you're chayv in Meiser. Meiser itself. Tosfos and Tainus and Daftes says it's a dinderaisa. Then the rice, a person mechiv to give him, it's drash of a sifri. You mechiv to give him 1/10 of your money to tzedakah is a tosus in times. The Beis Yosef is mashmitz the rabbanon, it's a kind of the rabbanon. Many poskim say that it's a minig. It's not a derisa, it's not a rabbanon, it's a minig. Now the Shulchan Aruch clearly says that with there's mitzvah to give tzedakah, that's clearly derisa, and Chazal gave that the preferred amount to give is 1/10. But the concept of you must give 1/10, there's a dinner, you must give 1/10, Meiser is a chiv, that's a minig, it's not a chiv. However, when you start that minig, it becomes like a netter.
Right.
And a netter is the rice. That which when a person starts doing something, a good custom, he's mechuyev to continue doing it, that's a din d'oraisa. Some service says that's a din d'oraisa. Once you're mechuyev to do it, you got to do it right. What's called Meiser. So now I have all these arguments. So I have to do. I have to be machmer because it's a question of the rice. I have to be stringent. So therefore, it's best when you start meiser. I'm saying from now on, giving meiser, I speak. I'm doing a bli netter with no obligation. Doing no obligation. So then, if you have an argument, you can be makel. I don't have to do every single stringent possibility because you know I'm not giving it as a full fledged responsibility. Let's say I started giving meiser and I didn't speak that out. So Locha says if you gave meiser 3 times, it's now considered a custom and you must give meiser from now on. Or, if you give Meiser 1 time with intent of planning to do it further, even though you did not say I'm planning, you did not speak it out, you did not express, say anything, it said you planned in your mind, I'm going to give Meiser, I will continue to give miser, then you're mechuyev to give. It becomes a minig tov, you're mechuyev to give it. But you could say bli neder. I didn't say bli neder. Do a taras nedar. The right thing to do is to do a taras nedar and say, I regret the fact that I didn't speak out bli neder when I started, which I should have done. And I make a public, and I'm going to make a mitzvah, a serious mitzvah, that from now on, when I give my, so I'm doing it without the intent that it should be obligatory, that I must continue to do it. And then we have an argument, you can be more lenient, otherwise you have a question of being more machmir. Thank you for asking that question. Okay.